Okay, bagpicker.com. And I'm Ben.
I'm Kai.
And Baggy is sound asleep, but Nikki is bright and attentive and may interrupt us with barking at any moment.
There are people pushing around horrific machinery in the yard next door.
What are people mowing in February for?
I have no idea.
Mowing the grass in February in Ohio.
It's not like it's growing.
No, it couldn't have grown.
I mean, we haven't had a whole lot of snowfall, but it's been cold.
And there's been too much wind for there to be any leaves. Mm-hmm. So what are you mowing in February in Ohio for? Psychotic people.
Obsessive compulsive disorder.
Oh, my. Let me look over here at my notes and see if there's anything interesting we can talk about. Oh, yeah, there is. That quote that I was talking to you earlier about, sadly, the internet is the last free place on earth. We have to go virtual to escape government oppression at this point. And if we lose this, there is no hope for humanity. If we retain it, the future will be full of prosperity and peace, unlike any we've ever known. But if we lose it, we don't even want to think about it. Ooh. This is a very libertarian person comment. This is not even commenting. This is the end of an article from LouRockwell.com. And I just see that as horribly pessimistic and naive.
I do too. You know, the internet's only been around for, what, 20 years?
Available to the public, yeah, about 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a usable form, 15, 18 years.
Yeah.
And not only that, it's just one tool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one tool, really. If the internet was gone tomorrow, then we would just simply adapt and figure out a new way of doing this.
Well, I mean, we did.
Yeah.
We already figured out the internet. You know?
Mm-hmm.
There's no telling what we can figure out next.
Yeah. This.
And, you know, quite frankly, okay, so the mainstream parts of the internet may be able to be controlled,
mm-hmm.
but all of the it's not a thing. Mm-hmm. The internet is not...
It's not like a series of tubes?
No. or a dump truck. You know, it is... I mean, there are underground bits of the internet right now that you and I cannot get to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'm trying to... You know, there was... When I did contracting with NASA, for a while, part of the thing that I was doing with them... this is not the whole thing, but part of the deal that I was working with NASA. They have a virtual private network on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So I was setting up a program that would use the internet... And it would go into their virtual, and I was doing this for NASA, so this is all above board.
Mm-hmm.
This is all white hat stuff. It would go into NASA's virtual private network, and it would go to NASA locations like Langley and like, what's the one over here? Oh, at Wright Pat, and not Langley, I think that's CIA. We didn't do that. But, I can't remember the names of them now. Anyway, I would go into their computers there and seek files that were a part of the project that we were working on, which was the high-speed civil transport. And so I would do search routines looking for files that were headered with anything that had to do with the high-speed civil transport. And then I would... and all those would be password locked.
Mm-hmm.
And all the engineers had either been fired or laid off because they closed the system, they closed the program.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't give us any time for all the engineers to back up their data. They just walked away from the computers and that was the end of the program. So we had literally billions of dollars worth of research data that was locked away behind passwords within NASA's own computers.
Right.
So what we were trying to do in the cleanup process of all this is go through and first find those files that were associated with the high-speed civil transport, determine if we could figure out what they were before we wasted time trying to hack them open.
Mm-hmm.
If we could figure out what they were, then we'd decide if they were worth hacking or not.
Mm-hmm.
If we couldn't figure out what they were, or if they were locked and we did realize that we needed them, then I set up a series of programs that would run password attempts until we would break into them, and then we could download that data and put it into a secure hosting for it. Now, all that was done using the internet, and yet none of it is visible to the exterior internet world because it was a virtual private network. So it's going on. You can't see my hands. We're back to this again. I'm demonstrating things with my hands, and that doesn't work with podcasts. But you have a parallel network that's running right with the internet, except it's invisible to the internet. And that's what the way NASA's virtual private network is.
There's this idea that, well, you know, you have to run everything off. You have to go off your ISP. Well, it's not hard to set up a server. You know, it's not hard to be an ISP. You know, so the idea that, well, they'll get control of these major ISPs, well, and it may be that they take, you know, 90% of the public offline. Or they take 90% of the public's freedom away online. But there can be freedom on the internet. And, you know, we've mentioned this before. If you want something, if you want to do something, if you want to have a market in something, do it. You know, don't sit there and say, well, but the government won't let me.
Okay, so the barking may be over now.
For the moment.
Time will tell. Yeah, and that's really the key, is to not ask permission and just do it. If you imagine there is no government, then that there is no state, then there is no state. If you just, you know, stop believing in the state, it's like Zeus. You know, you don't have to climb on top of the mountain to on top of Mount Olympus to prove there is no Zeus. Just stop believing in Zeus. And he's gone, just like that.
Wait, I think I just saw lightning.
That's Thor. He's real. Don't even mess with Thor. Yeah, and here's the thing of it. At some point in time, it's only logical that governments of the world, individually, and the state as a whole, will slam this door shut. I mean, they have to. It's their lifeblood is based on
it. They've done it with every other technological innovation. You know, when books came out, they were the pinnacle of...
That was anarchy.
When Gutenberg invented the press, that was it. There was no better way to get information across. And that was, the floodgates are open and there's no closing this. But...
And yet the state did. The state was able to eventually get monopoly control over the intellectual elite and the universities. And, you know, eventually the book publishing and the media and all these things became tools of the government.
And yet, there was still underground publishing going on.
Yeah, at the height of when there was no internet, and there were, in the United States, there were three TV networks. I think Great Britain had two at the time. And, you know, everything was locked down. All media was controlled. All book publishing was controlled. There's still crazy anarchists printing stuff in their basement and distributing it. And there's still guys like, you know, Rothbard was still getting books published. And, you know, right in the middle of all that, it's still, things are still happening. You just adapt and overcome.
The idea of this is our last hope is so terribly anti-free market. Because
it shows complete faith in the state and a complete lack of faith in the market.
If there's a demand for something, the market will make it. The market is stronger than the state is.
And that's the important key to it, really, because if you thought the other way, it would be illogical to be an anarchist or even a libertarian. If you think that the state is ultimately more powerful than the market, and if you think really that the state is, you know, so powerful that it could lock down something like the internet and that would be the end for all of us, if you really believe that, then you might as well face up to the fact that your faith is in the state, embrace it, go to the dark side, and, you know,
start waving the Constitution and
Or just don't even bother with that. Pick up Marx and let's go for the real thing. You know, jump right in there and go to work for Goldman Sachs and get what you can.
Yeah.
You know? Because if you really believe the state is that strong, the logical response then is to get on the side of the winner.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But that's the real key as to why it's silly when someone calls me a pessimist, because I say, well, the state will crush the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
The police state is inevitable. We will have a police state. The United States government at some point in time will outspend itself and collapse,
mm-hmm.
and a more oppressive government will arise,
mm-hmm.
and it will most likely be something like a North American Union or part of the UN or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we're moving towards at least a one-world state, if not a one-world government.
Right.
This will happen. It was destined from the time that human beings first accepted the concept of a state.
Yep.
But I have faith, and I put it that way for a reason, I have faith that eventually the state will collapse. And I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
My evidence to that is a bit shaky. I think my evidence is pretty good, and that being that when I list things like, for instance, the state has no ability to determine morals,
mm-hmm.
because humans develop an ability to determine morals two ways. We, one, learn it from our parents,
mm-hmm.
and two, we learn it from the reward-punishment aspects of life.
Mm-hmm.
If we do certain things and we run into opposition because of that, then we learn that lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we do certain things and we win, or we improve our situation, we learn lessons from that. And so we learn moral lessons in this fashion. But the state, A, has no parents, so it can't inherit anything and it can't learn anything from its parents. And B, the state feels no pain and no joy,
mm-hmm.
so it can't learn from the punishment-reward process. So the state has no morals and it can obtain no morals. The state cannot then determine justice. And additionally, the state is based on lies, theft, and aggression.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the state not only is immoral in itself, it cannot understand morality. It cannot, therefore, it is injustice by its very definition. Therefore, it cannot ever produce justice.
Mm-hmm.
So the state is immoral. It is incapable of producing justice. And finally, it is financially unstable.
Mm-hmm.
It will always consume far more than it produces. And everything that it puts its hand to, it always destroys more than it helps.
Mm-hmm.
So the state is economically doomed to destruction. The state is morally, legally, in every way, the state is going to collapse as soon as it consumes enough of its host.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a great way to put it. It's host.
Mm-hmm.
It's a virus.
Yeah.
You know, and it infects people and it consumes them. And
mm-hmm.
the only way that it can continue to live is
yeah.
if there are hosts.
Right.
And the good thing about any virus mm-hmm. is that there are people who are immune to it.
And that's us.
And so, you know, what do? You mm-hmm. create an immunity to it.
Right.
You know, and you spread that immunity.
Right. And know? That immunity is just the knowledge.
Not to get in the vaccine debate.
Yeah. We're going to forcibly give vaccines against the state. We've got the anarchy vaccine, and we mandate by law you take it.
But at a certain point, I mean, viruses are, you know, they are symbiotic bacteria
mm-hmm.
that keep you alive.
Right.
And you keep it alive and it keeps you alive and,
mm-hmm.
you know, everybody lives.
The whole digestive process takes place
mm-hmm.
because of bacteria.
Speaking of which, I think I'll take a drink of bacteria.
I just have water.
Well.
Tell me, Kai, what kind of bacteria are you consuming there?
That is a mixture of yeast and bacteria. It's kombucha or kombucha.
Yeah, well.
It's Russian.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Well, there's some debate whether it's Russian or Chinese.
Mm. Well, either way, it's communist.
Right.
Stinking terrible. Commies bringing in your commie drinks in here.
It's fermented tea. It's delightful.
But back
anyway,
to the subject.
They are, you know, you can have these beneficial bacteria that help and everybody works in a symbiotic relationship. Mm-hmm. But that's not what viruses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, viruses destroy their host.
Right. They literally, a virus cell infects a non-virus cell
mm-hmm.
and switches it around
mm-hmm.
and uses it to multiply and make a new cell with.
Yep.
Or a new series of cells.
That's one of the kind of freakiest things about viruses is they inject part of their DNA into the DNA of their host cell,
mm-hmm.
and then the cell mutates and forms more viruses, because
mm-hmm.
viruses don't reproduce.
Right. They lack the capability mm-hmm. because they're only half of the,
mm-hmm.
half of the formula
mm-hmm.
to reproduce.
Which is why they mutate so quickly.
Which goes back to our Spiders from Space podcast.
Right.
Remember our Spiders from Mars? The theory, the, what we're referring to here is the theory that because viruses are so not like any other entity on Earth,
mm-hmm.
then the theory has been propagated that viruses got to Earth by way of something like a comet
mm-hmm.
or something like that, that they have an origin on some other location. And a comet being super cold could actually house a virus, because
right.
a virus can be kept, what's the word for it? Not
dormant.
Active. It is dormant, but there's a name for a virus where it's in a dormant state, but it's still, as soon as it comes back, it's active. But I can't remember the word.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so the theory is, and I don't think this is mainstream by any way, but the theory is that a virus could live in the icy structure of a comet
mm-hmm.
and be transported for very far distances. The problem might be getting that virus into the atmosphere.
Right.
But it is possible that some way, something like that could take place.
Right. Not that we're saying it did.
No. No, that's just a one theory, you know. But the theory makes sense in the sense that there's no other creature on the Earth
mm-hmm.
that is like the virus where it's half of the DNA structure.
Well, there is. Not to be terribly crude, but
mm-hmm.
that's sperm.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
That's half of a DNA that gets together with another cell.
And it doesn't have the capability on its own.
That's
and
exactly
so it seeks,
what that is.
And so perhaps if this theory of space, you know, aliens,
mm-hmm.
Alien viruses from space. Are we going to name this podcast Alien Viruses from Space?
From Space.
Space. We'll have to get echo. I don't have a mixing board, so I can't add echo. Anyway, if you played that theory out, then you have the possibility that some faraway planet somewhere where this virus is, where a virus is actually a beneficial thing
mm-hmm.
in the ecosystem there, then there could be the other half of that virus, and it just makes something harmless like a butterfly.
Right. But here it horribly mutates with our horrible Earth cells and creates monsters.
And a virus is an odd thing in the sense that it's basically self-destroying.
Mm-hmm.
If it can't mutate into, as it first infects its host, and then it begins immediately killing its host.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say a virus always kills. Oftentimes the host is strong enough that it can overcome the virus.
Right. The virus always tries.
It tries.
It cannot just live in you.
Yeah, yeah. Like most other parasites, or whatever will, if they consume the host, they do it in the process of reproduction,
mm-hmm.
and then they go on. They don't wipe out a whole species or
right.
something like that. But you have the potential with a virus to pretty much take out a species.
Right. It will take out their entire food chain.
Yeah. It's very much not in line with what we see in the rest of the animal kingdom. This is completely not having to do with anarchy, though.
Sure it is. The state is a virus.
Oh, that's where we went with that. Yeah, it's an unnatural thing that's outside of the normal system.
And, so. You know, and perhaps this is being pessimistic, but with most viruses, you know, I don't actually know. Is leprosy a virus? I think leprosy is a bacteria, isn't it?
I'm not sure.
Anyway, well, if you take leprosy, for example, leprosy has almost been wiped out, not through people specifically trying to create, you know, vaccines or whatever, but simply because the people who are left alive are immune to it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how human beings adapt to their environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people who are immune to the state will outlive the state. And the people who are not immune to the state will not outlive the state.
Yeah, that's kind of the downer of the message that we have here, is that yes, when the state reaches its maturity, it's going to be really nasty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to kill a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
We assume this. We don't just assume this. We can project this.
Well, this is what the state has always done.
Yeah, you watch the name. I did a Duck Duck Goose thing the other day on one of the podcasts. Do you remember Duck Duck Goose?
I was just telling somebody else about Duck Duck Goose.
Kai is my daughter, for new listeners, and as far as I know, this is the only father-daughter anarchist podcast on the internet. So anyway, when my children were young, I taught them recognition of patterns and how to assume, how to figure out the future, essentially, by just the simple duck, duck, goose. So if I say duck, duck, goose, duck, duck, goose, duck, duck, goose, duck, duck, goose, when I say duck, duck, you know what's coming next. You don't have to be a scientist. You don't have to be a prophet. You don't have to have a vision of the heavens. If you hear duck, duck, you know goose is coming next.
Right.
Okay, so when you see patterns like this, whether it's the state, whether it's societal patterns, whether it's activity among humans, you know, other activity among humans, once you see a repeating pattern, it's not hard to project ahead and see what's going to happen next. So with the state, it's the same way. You watch the state always behave in, now there's variations in the state, you know, slowly learns and it adapts to situations. So, you know, at first it needs a priest king, and then it gets rid of that and just becomes the king. And then pretty soon it gets rid of the king and it has a multi-headed government.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty soon it doesn't need that and it just keeps morphing each time. But it still, it follows these same patterns.
Well, because, I'm going to say something really radical, the state is based off the free market. And whatever the people need the state to be is what the state is.
Technically, yeah. Even though the state is a socialist organization, it's based on socialism, on the concepts of socialism.
I firmly maintain that there is no such thing as socialism. Socialism is just a market. You know, and I've said this to, and oh, my hippie friends get mad at me when I say this, but I point out, you know, the ultimate socialist ideal, which is a commune.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody works together.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets the same amount of everything. Nobody has any property rights. And, you know, you milk your cow and everybody gets a share of the milk. And, well, what does that equal? That equals your work is worth a share of the profits. You're just working for payment there.
Yeah.
That is the absolute fundamental. That's how nature works.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get away from that.
The twist with socialism is that, and this is the part that the socialists will never recognize or never admit to, in any kind of communistic or socialistic or even fascistic,
there has to be force.
Yeah, because somebody is the guy who's profiting from this.
Mm-hmm.
There's some person or there's some small group of people, some elite, there's some small group that have to, they have to be the central planners, the organizers, or the authority. And those people somehow always have slightly more rights than anyone else, you know?
They go in the farmhouse, and they play poker.
The next thing you know, the pigs are walking on their back feet, smoking cigars, wearing coveralls.
But it's funny because you can, you know, you can watch communes and see the entire argument against socialism.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't work. It never works.
Yeah.
You know, yes, there are long-running communes. Mm-hmm. Why are there long-running communes? Because they constantly cycle new people in.
Or they produce a product and sell it to the outside community for external support of their...
And there's generally, the communes that actually work well are communes that are like
faith-based,
yeah. And there's always a leader.
Yeah,
you have to have someone in charge.
Yeah,
you know, there's always that top guy who makes everybody's schedules, and you know,
this is a good way to make socio-anarchists really upset. Or what do they call themselves? What's the other? There's another phrase that they try to make it sound like it's not socialism, but it really is socialism. The anarchist, the red flag guys, not the gold and black, the red and black, you know, not our team, their team. Anyway, you can really upset them by pointing out that, yes, you know, they want a socialist utopia with no leaders. Mm-hmm. And who's going to be the ones who lead that socialist utopia with no leaders? Because ultimately, it's going to need central planners.
Yeah.
Because if it's socialism, it needs central planners.
Yeah.
And somehow the central planners always, since they're the decision makers, they always seem to make the decisions that are best in their benefit, you know?
Funny how that works.
Yeah.
Of course, it's hard. You hate to make this argument because this is the eternal argument against anarchists,
mm-hmm.
which is, well, when has that ever existed? You know,
the socialism.
But
or
when
the...
has anarcho-socialism ever existed? It doesn't.
Right.
You know?
Or it might temporarily in a small cult somewhere, but mm-hmm. then it either.
But again, there has to be a leader.
Yeah, there's some personality or some. Yeah, something.
There's never anarchy with mm-hmm. socialism. You yeah. can't, there has to be force involved.
Yeah.
Either the force of kicking you out of the little club, or there's always force involved.
Or anytime there's central planning, and this is from Mises' argument, anytime you have central planning, you can't determine the values mm-hmm. of the things that are in exchange, and so therefore you can't determine production levels,
mm-hmm.
and therefore you always have gluts and shortages,
yep.
and therefore you always have shortages.
Gluts and shortages? What's that like?
Yeah, kind of like there was, like, government-subsidized housing created a glut of housing that caused a crash in the housing market that caused people to not be able to afford homes.
That would never happen.
Even though there are houses being destroyed because we have an overabundance of homes and still people can't afford homes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gluts and shortages in a socialist system. By the way, leprosy is a bacteria.
Ah, bacteria.
Yeah. The internet.
Which is logical because it doesn't actually kill its host.
Yeah.
You can survive for quite some time with leprosy.
Yeah.
And
it spreads it to other people by you living longer, not just going in your room and huddling down and dying of a fever in 3 days.
Right.
Like a virus might do.
Yeah, viruses kill quickly.
Typically, yeah. That's, I guess, AIDS is a virus.
Mm-hmm.
The HIV is a virus. Left to itself, it kills pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of controversy over that, too. Let's not get into that one. With the number of listeners we have, we might get into trouble if we start talking about the origin of the AIDS virus.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say we could talk about conspiracy theories like we talked about the other day on the other podcast, and we'd probably be safer talking about the, you know, 9/11 and chemtrails and
wait, let's talk about a safer subject. So how about that birth control?
Yeah, that'll really win friends and influence people. Oh my! So back on, just to give the coup de grace to the concept that, you know, that just losing the internet will end our hopes of liberty. Baggy has joined us. Hi, Baggy. How you doing?
Somebody woke up from our nap.
So momentarily, the microphone will probably be attacked. But anyway, so just to finish off that, to have so much faith in the state that you say, you know, if we lose this one thing, if we lose the internet, we're sunk for sure. That's like Walter Block's comment back in the latter part of last year, where he said, Ron Paul is our last great hope for liberty.
And if I believed that, I'd be out. I'd be done.
Yeah. Because all it takes, I mean, any one of us, you know, a bus can hit any one of us. A heart attack can happen to the
yep.
healthiest person at any time. You don't know all the oddities that are going on in the human body.
A virus can hit you?
Yeah. If all of the hope, the last hope of liberty is based on one person, then it was never worth having to begin with.
Right.
It just, you know, it's not something that that the market wants.
Yeah.
And so it's not going to work. It's not going to happen. If it really is that fragile. The problem is, Walter Block was wrong.
Right.
Again.
Right.
And Ron Paul is not the last great hope of liberty. No. He's just another human being like the rest of us. He may be very influential. He may have influenced a lot of people. The future will tell what will happen with his presidential attempt. But no matter what, he's just a man.
And if you put your faith in one thing to make the liberty happen, isn't that a central planner who's designing your liberty? Doesn't that not work?
Well, when Walter Block takes the position of saying, this is the only way we can have liberty, and I'll design it for you, or Ron Paul and I will design it for you, then, yeah, Walter Block is taking the position of a central planner and saying, this is how it has to be done, rather than letting the market choose. Because you know what? Maybe Ron Paul, and I'm just saying maybe, I'm not supporting anybody even saying this, but maybe Ron Paul is not the best hope for liberty. Maybe, what's his name, the other governor, Johnson, Gary Johnson. Maybe Gary Johnson's the way to go. Maybe Rand Paul is the way to go. Maybe Ron Paul is just a precursor to what Rand Paul. It's totally illogical to put all your hope.
Or maybe we stop putting our faith in a hero god.
Yeah, that's a concept.
Maybe you stand up for your own liberty and say, no one else is responsible for my liberty. Only I'm responsible for my liberty.
That would be quaint.
Maybe stop bowing down before the altar of hero gods cloaked in the guise of the state and stand up for yourself. You want to stop being a slave? Stop being a slave. Just do it.
Yeah. Do it by just deciding in your mind that the state cannot save you.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Paul, being in charge of the government, can't save you. The state can't save what the state state can't fix what the state has broken. This is like, you know, I have the visions of that in Star Wars, the pleading in the very first episode of Star Wars where the lady is pleading, help us, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're our last hope. Well, you're sunk.
Yeah.
If that really was the case, it's over.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't understand the entire mentality of this victim, come save me, somebody else needs to fix all of this.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in your own liberty, be interested in your own liberty.
Yeah.
You know? And at the end of the day, when there is enough of a market demand for liberty, there will be liberty.
And at that point, it can't be stopped.
Yeah.
The state, this has been proven over and over. You know, the state didn't want the internet to get loose.
Mm-hmm.
The state didn't want lots of things like that to get loose. But when the market decides it wants it,
yeah,
it doesn't matter what the state wants. The state has tried over and over. The alcohol prohibition is a perfect example of this. The state decides, you know what, we're going to crack down, we're gonna get control of these people, and they're not going to be, really? No, I don't think so.
How'd that work out for you?
The state decides, you know what, we're going to outlaw this plant, and now you can't grow marijuana, you can't possess marijuana, you can't transport it, you can't sell it, you can't buy it, you can't, really? Really, because it's pretty easy to get a hold of.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy to get a hold of pretty much anywhere,
yeah,
no matter who you are. And the state can't do a thing about it.
Yep.
The state fights, the state kills, the state does all the horrible thing the state can do, and the market still says, you know what, we're going to have these horrible, nasty drugs. And as long as people want them, it doesn't matter what the state wants.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure there are people who want liberty more than they want drugs.
Yeah.
Because I don't necessarily want any drugs, but I'm going to have liberty.
Yeah. And it's just a matter of at what point will be the tipping point.
Yeah.
At what point will the market spontaneously erupt ideas for liberty?
Yeah, and to the point of where it will just be too much for the state to be able to handle.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is the training process that has to go on in the next generation or so, where we begin to understand among us that going in and trying to use the government to fix the government is counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to be doing is figuring out how that we can communicate, transfer money, transfer property, all these things without the state's involvement, without, mm-hmm. you know, do all these things entirely underground and without the state's permission and just do it. And,
yep.
And that's kind of what we're talking about, an underground network before.
Yeah.
At some point in time, I envision a virtual private network that is strictly liberty oriented. Up in New Hampshire, it's interesting to watch the New Hampshire Liberty people communicate, because if you watch them on Twitter or Facebook or any of the social media like that, when they put a message out, they'll say something like, and this is not all, I shouldn't say, it's not universal among them, but because there's a wide diversity of the people who moved to New Hampshire for the Free State Project. But you see this regularly. You'll see somebody say something in a social media like, you know, it almost sounds like the mafia. Like, are we doing this thing? I don't know. Are those guys going to be there? Yeah, I think the guys are going to be here. Are your people going to be here? Well, our people will be there. Are we at that one place? Yeah, it's going to be at that place. Okay. The regular time? No. How about the other time? And that's the form of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in that loop, you know what they're talking about.
Yep.
Now, this is how the mafia has communicated for years.
Yep.
Bikers communicate like this. You know, you can communicate right in the open, on an open telephone line, and the feds can be listening, and they can't do squat about it.
Yep.
Because they don't know what you're talking about.
Yep.
The other thing I talked about, have I talked to you about graffiti? About the use of graffiti? Now, realizing that...
Sorry, they couldn't see me shaking my head.
Oh.
No.
I saw you shake your head. Gangs use graffiti symbols not only just to mark territories, but to actually put messages out,
mm-hmm.
To signify distances to safe houses,
mm-hmm.
to signify, you know, a lot of different messages that they want to communicate to a large body of people that they don't necessarily want to say in a way that the police can understand what they're talking about.
Hey, the cops, look here.
Yeah. So I can envision things like, oh, and here's the other thing. At one point in time, there were individuals who were taking JPEG pictures
mm-hmm.
on the internet and emailing JPEG pictures. And embedded into that JPEG, in the coding of the JPEG, you can write text.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you email a JPEG and it goes from one person to another, then it looks like you just got a picture of a funny bunny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a rabbit with his little smile and his little face, and he's looking over a clover. You know, he's got a clover in his little paws and he's got half of it eaten, and you think, oh, what a funny, cute little bunny rabbit. But embedded into that picture, if you open that up in text, you can see that embedded in that picture is a message.
Right.
And it's not invisible if you know where to look, but it's not obvious either.
Right.
Well, the government figured that trick out. So that won't work.
No, but, you know, there are other ways of doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. Now, using the combination of the gang symbology and the funny bunny with a little rabbit and with a little flower, let's say that within your terminology, a certain person...
And the idea of the layering of Photoshop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's another thing, too.
Because you can put a layer on in Photoshop and then cover it up with a different layer.
Yeah. And then just remove one layer and there it is again. This came up with Obama's...
the birth certificate.
The birth certificate. Evidently, Obama had a Photoshopper who knew how to do this, but they didn't realize that the rest of the internet also knew how to undo it. Oh, man. And then so many people were like, no, he proved that. He released his birth certificate. I saw it on the internet. It was real. Yeah. Did you lift the layers off? What's a layer? You know,
yeah,
but there's ways to do this. But
those people are not immune to it.
So there are ways to do things right out in the open, and there are ways to do things totally underground.
Mm-hmm.
And as the need arises, we will adapt to these things. It would be handy if we'd adapt to it now. You know, over at the Freedom Fiends podcast, there's this. Couple weeks ago or so.
Or at the very least beginning to be in a mindset where we need to start thinking about these things. Because whatever you think up,
mm-hmm.
eventually the state is going to catch on to it, and you're going to have to change it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
when you start putting yourself in the mentality of, I need to start thinking of ways to do this.
Yeah.
You know.
Then you do begin thinking mm-hmm. of ways to do it. Who would have thought, just a few years back, who would have thought that you could do things like take a PVC pipe, go down to your local hardware store, buy a 6-inch diameter piece of PVC pipe, about a few feet long, and use PVC glue. This is a standard. You can use PVC drainage pipe, or you can use the Schedule 40 higher pressure pipe. You can use the cheaper thin wall pipe. Any of these things will work. And permanently glue a cap on one end, a PVC cap, and permanently glue a screw cap on the other end with the screw part not glued. Mm-hmm. And then you can open that up and take a pair of post hole diggers. And the reason I'm saying this is because it's all over the internet now.
Right.
But a few years ago, nobody knew about this. And doing what I just described, you can take an SKS... A few years back, cheap Yugoslavian SKS rifles and Chinese SKS rifles were flooding the market for about $100 each.
Mm-hmm.
So you, at the time, back then, you could pick up, you know, 4 or 5 of them pretty cheap.
There was a glut of them?
There was a glut of them because they were produced in a socialist economy. So capitalists took advantage of that, evil capitalists that we are. And you could buy, you know, $100 each, you could buy as many as you wanted.
Right.
And, you know, for a total of an investment, a total investment of the rifle and the PVC pipe and a couple hundred rounds of ammunition and a post hole digger and a walk in the woods, and you could make a stash, you could make, you know, a number of stashes
mm-hmm.
so that all the paranoid people who are afraid of the government coming and taking away your guns... Well, if you were planning this a few years ago, there are now, all over the United States, in secret locations that only some people know about.
Well, the entire idea of geocaching.
Yeah.
You know, this is a fun, fun. You get to, look, I found a butterfly watch, you know. Well, that exact same mentality.
Mm-hmm.
With a different thing that's hidden.
Well, like a thumb drive.
Mm-hmm.
You can do the exact same process as you're doing with geocaching, except you use careful language and you stash thumb drives.
Mm-hmm.
And you can transmit a lot of information like that using thumb drives. I mean, they have thumb drives now that hold a tremendous amount of information.
Yeah. That are cheap.
Yeah. And you can actually embed them into places so they're permanently fixed in a place
mm-hmm.
so that, you know, in a public place that where you can just step around the corner into an alley and, you know, somebody has chipped a little hole between bricks in the...
Mm-hmm.
in the.
Not even thumb drives. You take the SD cards.
Yeah.
You know, somebody walks up, pulls the SD card from their phone mm-hmm. or pulls the SD card from the... geocache, sticks it in their phone, downloads the information, puts it back,
yeah.
walks away.
Did you hear, there was an incident of police brutality in California recently. Did you hear about this?
Mm-mm.
With the homeless woman that was, mentally handicapped homeless woman that was on a bus and that was having some type of emotional experience. And so a couple of sheriffs come on the bus, sheriff deputies come on the bus, and evidently she was saying some pretty harsh things to one of the sheriff deputies,
mm-hmm.
a big guy. She was, you know, an elderly woman with obvious mental issues,
mm-hmm.
and he's a big guy, big, powerful man, and he just takes his forearm, throwing it just like a punch. You can't see my arm right now. Throwing his punch just like a punch. Except instead of landing his fist, he landed his forearm right in her face and just nailed her and knocked her down. And then they roughed her up, slammed her into one of the seats, and got really rough with her. Well, the whole time this is happening, and I'm not saying whether he was justified or not justified. It's not the point. The whole time while this is happening...
I'll say it. He wasn't justified.
I don't know how a big man like that is justified initiating... that level of force upon a woman who is obviously mentally problems, you know, but there are ways to do this without a bash in the face. But anyway, the whole time this is going on, there's this Iraqi war veteran in the back of the bus filming it with his camera. Mm-hmm. And when they get done beating up the homeless lady, then they go back to him. They're going to take his camera. Well, he's sharp enough that he's able to say, oh, okay, sure. And as he lowered his hand, you can't see my hands. As he lowered the camera with his hands, he just, covering it with one hand, he slipped his other hand behind it and pulled out the SD card. Mm-hmm. And as he handed the phone to the cop, he popped the SD card in his mouth. And then he leaned over and gave his girlfriend a kiss, transferred it to her. And then they searched him looking for the SD card, couldn't find it. The girlfriend's sitting there with it in her mouth all the time. That would have taken some effort not to... I don't know how sensitive those are to moisture.
Right.
But somehow she kept it in her mouth. And that's how they got the filming of this away from the police. Mm-hmm. And because of it, the sheriff's department is now reviewing and he's under suspension and the whole nine yards. Like
what
that.
I want to see happen, I am not technologically advanced enough to make it happen. I want to see a Skype channel mm-hmm. where you can dial into that. Because you can use Skype on your phones now.
Yeah.
Dial into the Skype, film it mm-hmm. live.
And make it live right there.
Goes straight to that Skype account, and the Skype account records it.
Are you familiar with Porcupine 411? Porcupine 411 is a thing they run up in New Hampshire. That if you're anywhere, but that's not the phone number.
Right.
You have to know the phone number. And it was in my phone that got taken by Homeland Security. Oh, no. I'm sorry, guys. But anyway, if you're suddenly pulled over for whatever reason, this is what they set up in New Hampshire. You just dial Porcupine 411 on your, you have it on auto dial, mm-hmm. and you hit the Porcupine 411 thing. And it starts, and they record it, mm-hmm. and it goes right into their system, and they start recording it, and they send out alerts to other people that are in the system. So you can say, hey, I'm on so-and-so highway, and this, I don't know if this is really a cop or not. It, you know, this is, I'm under a weird situation. This cop's not acting normal, mm-hmm. and I'm on this route and this between these mile markers, and they get people out there with cameras to start filming it. Mm-hmm. That's the theory behind it. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, if you could set up something like that using Skype or something like that mm-hmm. and have a nationwide network to where instantly this stuff
would
be...
Because more and more cops are, you know, they... the Supreme Court, no, you can film cops and they can't... Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, the...
oh, what? I destroyed your camera? Oh, slap on the wrist. I'm a bad cop.
You'll have another week off with pay for that.
Yeah.
When the Motorhome Diaries guys were going through some area of Tennessee, and some of the local police saw this Yankee motorhome with its Yankee license plate and its fancy writing all over it. Folks, I love people in Tennessee, not my point.
We just don't love the jackbooted thugs.
Well, you're not supposed to say that. That hurts their feelings.
Oh, dude, I hurt them's feelings.
But, so they saw this motorhome.
Mister, that hurts almost as much as a forearm to the nose.
They saw this, out-of-state motorhome with out-of-state tags. And with all this, you know, Motorhome Diaries was all painted all over it. And they had, like, Ron Paul stickers. And they had all this stuff all over this motorhome. And so the cops pull them over and start hassling them. And they're doing this for a living.
Right.
You know, so they've got cameras in, like, every direction.
This is their goal.
Yeah. And so the cops end up confiscating their cameras. And wouldn't give them back. And finally, when the cops gave them back, the cops had deleted all the stuff that was on the cameras, not knowing that when you delete something, you don't really delete it.
Right.
You know, I mean, most people figured that out a long time ago, that a geek with some fancy software can retrieve anything that's been deleted. So they had to go through all the process of getting that first. They had to get court orders to get their camera equipment back. Mm-hmm. Then they had to take it and get it, there's a word for that, a forensic, mm-hmm. Extraction of the data. And then they were able to go after the police department and get compensation for all of that. Except,
they're lucky that they didn't just get their camera smashed.
Yeah, yeah, actually.
Most of the time, well, it's just smashed.
As the authorities understand this process more, that is what will happen with
yeah.
them. They'll just end up wherever my camera is now on the highway in southern in Illinois. But it's okay, because they were compensated. See,
right.
eventually the courts went in their direction. They were
right.
compensated. But who
paid? Money
yeah.
was stolen from the general
yeah.
public.
So the cops just go out and steal from the neighborhood. And the poor folks around Tennessee end up paying for these clowns who were breaking the law
mm-hmm.
and who, you know, destroyed equipment and did all the things that they did.
Yep.
And the actual...
Yay, that's a victory.
The actual bullies that did this deed were not in any way actually punished.
No.
Because the state has no punishment mechanism. The state doesn't feel any punishment, even when someone representing the state does something bad, and even if that person gets busted, the state itself feels nothing. The
yep.
state will any time the state will take one of its own and shoot its own. You know, it will
yeah.
sacrifice to one of its own.
It doesn't care.
I think that's one of the most tragic aspects of the state, is that there are people, police officers, who are fully dedicated. They think they're doing the right thing. And they're fully dedicated to this. They've put their life into it. And they don't realize that the state could care less about them.
Mm-hmm.
And the state will sacrifice. You have a good cop who spent his life trying to do good. And you have a bad cop who's trying to cover up something bad that he did. And if what he did will embarrass the department, the whole department will turn on the good cop
mm-hmm.
and destroy him rather than take the black eye for the bad cop.
Yep.
Because the state itself has no feelings at all,
yep.
no emotion, and no dedication.
No loyalty
at all. And so these people who have spent their life in dedication to the state, and the state will just turn around and squish them like they're a common criminal and not even blink.
Mm-hmm.
And when this happened, these people are crushed,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
I think that's the worst thing with the people coming back from combat veterans
yeah.
who come back to a U.S. that has dramatically changed since they left and to police that are dramatically more violent than they were just 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they come back and they say, this is what I was risking my life for? This is what
not
my friends got blown
ago.
Into pieces for?
We are so much more police state now than we were 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's changing very rapidly at this point. And these veterans are coming back, looking at that, going, you know, they maybe volunteered because they wanted to do the right thing. They're like 19, 20, 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They're full of dedication. They're an honor, and they want to do the right thing, and they love their country. And they throw their whole life into this, and they see, for years, they see horrific things in foreign countries. And they, the whole time, they're telling themselves, however horrible this is, it's for a better cause. It's
mm-hmm.
for a better thing. And then they come back here, and they see that that's all a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And it just blows their mind. And
yep.
right now, the suicide rate among military veterans, among active duty military, is terrible.
Yeah.
The mainstream media is almost ignoring it. The really dangerous part about this is that there can be a backlash against the liberty movement over this.
Mm-hmm.
If these returning vets realize the farce of the state and they turn towards the liberty movement, and the only method they know to combat the state is through the means of the state,
mm-hmm.
and so they physically attack the state, and the state uses that as an excuse to go after even those who are very clearly non-violent, like most of the anarcho-capitalists
mm-hmm.
are. It's a very dangerous situation for all of us.
Yeah. It's a very dangerous situation. And I feel like I've thought about it. And, you know, when Rome was at its height,
mm-hmm.
it was horrific.
Mm-hmm.
It was doing horrific things.
Mm-hmm.
And then it fell. And then it was replaced. And when it was replaced by, you know, the Inquisition.
Mm.
And that was far more horrific than Rome.
Yeah.
And then it fell.
Mm-hmm.
And it was replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And we just continue having the cycle. You know, the horrors of the Inquisition were nothing compared to Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
They're nothing. Drop in the bucket.
And most people don't realize, really and truly, that we're doing... I referred to a podcast where a guy talked about this. We're doing pretty much the same thing. All the main aspects of the Inquisition, we're doing those things right now. Mm-hmm. Not only secretly in CIA bases in foreign countries that the government has admitted to, but these things are taking place to a certain extent in police offices. Mm-hmm. And not only that, you know, Guantanamo is a classic example, but some people don't want to talk about that. But the fact is that this is happening in CIA mm-hmm. bases around the world, and we're just pretending it's not happening. Mm-hmm. And it's happening on a far bigger scale than any Inquisition ever took place.
Oh, yeah. You know, when we saw the horrors of the state at the end of World War II,
yeah,
we didn't stop it.
Yeah.
And so it continued.
Yeah.
And so now we're at a position where we have to let it get big again. Mm-hmm. We have to let it get to its, mm-hmm. you know, ultimate so that it can come down again. And and if we just keep letting this cycle go, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever horrors were, you know, gassing and, you know, murdering millions of people in mm-hmm. World War II, that's nothing.
Yeah.
Because what we're coming to is worse than that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, it's an odd thing that as horrendous as the stuff that the Nazis were doing, because that was focused on civilians, mm-hmm. on civilian, you know, the Jews and the gypsies and mm-hmm. some Christians, but mostly the Jews and some gypsies. But then the United States ended that war by vaporizing two cities, mm-hmm. cities full of...
civilians.
Of civilians. Vaporizing two cities full of civilians. And the documentation is starting to come forward now that the Japanese government had been attempting to negotiate a surrender, but we went ahead and pushed through and dropped the two bombs because we knew we'd be dealing with Russia. Mm-hmm. And so it was like a warning to Russia. So as essentially, you know, the theory is being confirmed with current documentation that's coming forward, that it was discussed on a White House level that we should go ahead, while we have while we can do this and get away with it, we should go ahead and make an example of these Japanese cities so that the Russians, you know, won't. And of course, like any other action of the state,
they were our allies at the time.
Yeah, Russia was our allies at the time. And but we had known what they were doing to people in Ukraine and things like this. So the theory then is that the U.S. government consciously made the choice to vaporize two cities full of civilians to scare the Russians. Except what they actually did, because anytime the state takes an action, whatever good they want to come from it, there's always far more bad that mm-hmm. takes place. So what happened was people involved in the Atomic Energy Commission who saw and were appalled that the U.S. had used those weapons on Japanese citizens, then leaked information to the Soviet Union that allowed them the opportunity to build counter weapons mm-hmm. and for them to have the bombs too. And so it was the actual act of the U.S. government that scared those people into turning over that information to Russia because they were so afraid that the U.S. would continue behaving in that direction. Mm-hmm. So here we have the horror of the Nazis killing civilians. And how do we end the war? By vaporizing two cities full of civilians to scare the Russians. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, mm-hmm. that's a pretty nasty accusation against the U.S. government.
Well, and I mean, it's not surprising, you know.
And you have to realize that's not the American people.
Yeah.
That's not the Western culture or American culture. That is a set of 500 and some lawmakers and maybe 30 of all those almost 600 lawmakers, there's maybe 30 real action takers mm-hmm. in Washington, D.C. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the actions of about 30 people in Washington, D.C.
And
well, we've got to cut this off, so... I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
Folks, thanks for listening to BadQuaker.com podcast. Get over to the website for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights. Go to BadQuaker.com. Thanks, folks.